Friday, October 24th. Welcome back to Damon Bruce Plus. Great to have you here. Big weekend of sports coming up. It's been a hell of a year this week in sports. I mean, good God, scandals just popping up everywhere in the NBA yesterday. A very important week eight and a 49er team that we're still trying to figure out what do they actually have here. This is a really good time to be a sports fan. World Series starts tonight. The NBA, for good and it's bad, totally underway. How entertaining. Here's the thing. On a night where the NBA really needed a little basketball to bail them out of the headlines that you saw all day yesterday, they got it. What a performance by Curry, beating the Nuggets in overtime last night. Jimmy with a big three-pointer. That was an awful lot of fun. It really was. So we got some things to talk about. We got our very good friend Sam Batesh joining us in about 5-10 minutes when he gets out of his meeting down at ESPN LA. Now he is your post-game host of your Los Angeles Kings. So Sammy's got a little bit of a busy morning. He'll be joining us in just a little bit. But it is wonderful to have you here. And when you're thinking about lunch today, tomorrow, this weekend, check out my guy. Check out this guy right here. Ike of Ike Sandwiches. I'm telling you, he's got something absolutely delicious just waiting for you, ready to go. This is me as a sandwich. How much better do I look as a sandwich than as a human being? I also taste better, too. So you're going to want to go to Ike's. I hope there's one near you, around you, or we'll be opening soon. Over 120 locations, growing quickly. Free sandwich when you sign up for that Love Rewards program. Thanks to everyone at Ike's. I mean, I don't know where you're going to watch game one of the World Series. Does the Dubliner open at 10 a.m. for kickoffs, early kickoffs? I don't know. Either way, Dubliner West Portal is where you want to go when you need the best Guinness in all of San Francisco and just want to hang out in a cool spot with some cool people. And that's just my kind of bar right there. Dubliner West Portal. We thank them for being incredible sponsors here. And on a day where talking about the interesting relationship that gambling and sports now have together, which we did all day yesterday, I also want to remind you that we're brought to you this football season by Sleeper, the world's fastest growing fantasy site. Of course, use these things responsibly and without FBI investigation. If you're actually a player, do not go shaving points or limiting your own minutes if you've got Sleeper parlays. But I'm telling you, it's a great place to check out. It is an unbelievable app. The user interface is A+. And right now you can get a $100 deposit match up to $100 when you use promo code Damon over on Sleeper. And oh, by the way, a free $20 remains for you to the end of this month. You don't even need to sign up, deposit anything, a free $20 to play with over on Sleeper. So thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to all of you for being here. Sammy will be joining us in just a little bit. And I'm going to tell you something. I mean, you know, Larry understood what I was saying today on Wake Up. He didn't really want to hear it, but I think it's the truth. You might not want to hear it either. It's a house money game for the San Francisco 49ers going to Houston. Now, I know the thumbnail of today is that week eight is where teams start separating from each other, and they really do. Week eight football matters. This is our natural halfway point in the majority of our NFL lifetime. You know, until they added that 17th game, here we were, week eight. This is when you started figuring out who was and who was not in this league. And as I look at the 49ers, they suggest by their record they might be a was. Due to the injuries and all the problems, it also sounds like a was not when it came to 49er playoff chances. That look, this team exists in a world that is a very strange world to try to even understand or comprehend, because you normally don't get these two things at once. As Ralph Barbieri famously said, two things can be equally true. And I'm just going to tell you right now that the 49ers absolutely exist in a world where they're kind of screwed by the Fred Warner and Nick Bosa injuries. Those are devastating to the overall big picture. But the 49ers also very much exist in a world where even with those massive, impossible to replace injuries, they're going to get better as the year goes along. I mean, I think they might be a little bit better right now with Hennessy at center instead of Brendel. I think they're going to get better the minute Ricky Pearsall can rejoin the conversation, which apparently will not be this weekend in Houston. I think they're going to get better when Brandon Ayuk rejoins the conversation. I think they're going to get better when Brock Purdy rejoins the conversation. I've been wildly impressed with Mac Jones. He has been exactly what this team needs. And I'll tell you, for the first time all year going to Houston, they're going to have an advantage that they have not had in a single football game. And we'll see how they take advantage of the fact they're going to have the best offensive line in a football game for maybe the first and only time all year. Houston's offensive line is that team's fatal flaw. They've got injuries too. Tank Dell, Nico Collins, and those guys are not there. But man, that is a bad offensive line. If you watched last week, this team, this Houston team in Seattle, you saw nothing but a backpedaling C.J. Stroud all game long. He was backpedaling for his life the entire football game. Now, a lot more fangs to bear, for sure, on that Seattle offensive or defensive line. 49ers are going to have the best offensive line in this football game, which means you can control, hopefully, the game just a little bit. And against a very good defense that isn't giving up more than 14 points, you're going to have to control a football game. You're not going to want to let it get away from you, because playing catch up against Houston is going to be hard. This is a team you want to front run against. And we know how much Kyle loves to front run. It's going to be a fascinating game in Houston. If the Niners lose it, no big deal. If they win it, oh, I mean, fantastic. You can't complain about wins in this league. This would be a loss that I would not complain about either. Number one, I mean, eventually the other shoe has to drop here on the Niners, right? I'm not saying Houston's most qualified to do it, but their injuries have officially reached a level of absurd, and officially, I think, are also now like no more. We've officially reached the saturation point on can you still play well with all these injuries. I don't know what more you could expect the Niners to actually get out of this football team and its depth chart than they've already gotten. Eventually, the well runs dry on, you know, WR4, and good luck with that. You know, Kendrick Bourne can only bring you so far. If they win in Houston, they will have gotten away with on-paper football murder again. That would be phenomenal. They're 6-2. They stay aggressive at the trade deadline. You know, I mean, I've been hearing the exact same conversation about what the 49ers are going to be doing at the trade deadline. What they're going to be doing at the trade deadline is either adding Arden Key, Bradley Chubb, Jalen Phillips, or Jermaine Johnson. It's like one of those four names is going to be it. You know, there's a point here where we know what needs to happen. It feels like they're trying to make something happen, and it's only a matter of time that the team does improve its chances with a trade. Now, should it be a monumental mortgage the future trade? Absolutely not. Not at all. I mean, the 49ers are in a place where they should be happy with how they're positioned in spite of the circumstances. They should be looking to reward the guys who are well positioned with just a tiny little bit more help here to get you through the season. But you don't go giving up the future. You still have a pretty good present. But you don't want to reinvest. This is not the time to double down on the year, but it is time to add Arden Key. Like, Arden Key feels like a late in day three pick that you could add. That can't be hard to make that trade. And Trey Hendrickson is not coming. The Cincinnati Bengals, I don't think, are doing that. Max Crosby, kids, just don't even retweet that. Don't even bother. That's not happening. It is great to see so many regulars here. Again, our friend Sam is going to be joining us a little bit. Hit that like and subscribe button, Corporal Tez, indeed. Tried it, liked it, all about. Thank you very much. We got a maximum football request. Maximum. We're there. It's week 8. You got a new animation when you hit the like button? Oh, well, there's just another reason to do it right there. You could hate the show, but you want to see that new animation, right? Smiley, I just dropped CJ from my fantasy squad. I apologize now. That catapults him into MVP play. Yeah, if he absolutely gets his legs underneath him, it must be Smiley Dan's fault this week. Texans got a bad run game. The place is extra weight on Stroud's young shoulders. It does. You got a bad offensive line. You got a running game that's not happening. It gets harder for your quarterback just like that. By the way, Brock Purdy and Mac Jones would be like, yeah, tell me more. They've been able to have a level of success that C.J. Stroud and D'Amico Ryans could only be dreaming of. The thing that Houston does have going for them in this game is D'Amico Ryans' obvious knowledge of how the 49ers run and operate and how Shanahan thinks. He knows his tendencies very well. All three of the coaches here, you know, D'Amico, Kyle, and Robert Saleh, they all know each other very, very well. So what that puts on the field is going to be an interesting element of this game coming up in Houston. You know, I do understand why people want to always worry about the next thing, as if there weren't enough current things to be worried about with the 49ers. It's the next thing that everyone wants to worry about. Worry is one of the hottest selling pastries in the bakery. Everybody comes in to say, have you got any fresh worry? You got something new I can worry about here? As if you didn't have enough in your bag of worries already to worry about. Now people are starting to worry about, well, what's Robert Saleh's future going to be? I mean, don't worry about that. I know you really like him as a coach. If you like him so much as a coach, you must know that he is head coaching material, and some smart football team will reapproach him. What the 49ers do at that point is one of two directions. Say, congrats, Bobby. Go get it, big fella. Thanks for coming back and being part of yet another successful story of the Kyle Shanahan reclamation projects. Quarterbacks, coaches, people off the street, come in. Kyle rubs his hand on their tops of their heads for a little bit, and they become candidates as coaches or quarterbacks who other teams are interested in. This is a good attribute for the 49ers to have, by the way, as a franchise. The fact that Kyle is a guy who can fix things, fix reputations, fix careers, that's a nice magnet for the 49ers to hang on the refrigerator that other people walking by the fridge have to notice. That's why they're thinking of popping into the fridge, seeing what's in there. Gus Bradley is on this coaching staff already. The next defensive coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers is already working on the team. And that would be an easy succession plan. What would also be, I would think, very easy is the 49ers just deciding, you know, Shanahan and Saleh, they really are the bee's knees in terms of the coaching staff that Jed York really wants to keep around. So guess what you can do, Jed? You can pay Robert Saleh as much money as you want. Would you like to pay him a dollar more than your head coach? That would be weird, might be a little awkward, but you could do that. To retain Robert Saleh as the 49ers defensive coordinator, Jed York could double the highest price coaching salary in the league and say, here you go. How much do you really want to be a head coach? How much do you really want the next Tennessee Titan beat writer to get to you and in terms of questions? Or you can make more money than you could even as a head coach by staying right here in a very good, advantageous, successful situation where it seems like every day your reputation only grows. I think I'd be able to sell Robert Saleh on the concept of staying right here. Saleh has made it abundantly clear that, you know, dealing with the media, especially that New York media, wasn't a very fun thing. I don't know. I think Saleh is enough of a football guy to where just coaching football might actually sound good to him. Especially if you can go ahead and buy me out of any desire to just be called head coach because it sounds fancy and it gets you a lot of attention. I mean, maybe Saleh's wired like Jay-Z when he's just like, dude, take the money. Fuck the fame. Seriously. You want to be rich and famous? Be rich. Famous is its limitations. It really does. big week eight around the NFL. Big 49er game that they actually can afford to let go, slip off. And they got two games in a row here on the road in Houston, in New York. The choice between winning these two is no choice at all. You want that NFC game. This is an AFC game. There aren't any losses that you could take that would affect the bottom line less than this one. Reality is going to come for the 49ers. They have already treaded water when they should have drowned. Let's see what they do. To me, they're playing with house money. They go, they win this game, super duper 6-2. How about that? They lose this game, no big deal. And hopefully the Philadelphia Eagles knock a little stuffing out of the New York Giants, who are about to think that they're capable of being a decent football team. We'll see about that. We always see our good friend Sam Batesh once a week, and we used to do it on a Thursday, but then he got all big time on us. I mean, we're talking about the voice of Los Angeles Kings postgame. He now, like Johnny Cash, only wears black.
That's it.
Little silver accent in the hair.
Of course. He's
using a little Grecian formula. Now he gets, honey, I'm going gray. It fits.
We're doing it.
Motif. Sam Batesh joins us for a weekly Hey, How Are Ya? Always a pleasure, Sammy. What's going on?
Damon, hello. The name's Samboni, which it's starting to stick. Samboni kind of makes sense with the Kings here. And you're right. It's so nice to call gray silver. Doesn't it sound nicer? My hair has a silver, right? Not a gray hue, but a silver hue. And with the Kings colors behind me, the silver is a nice touch. So we'll go with that. I love where you're going in regards to the Niners. I love where you look. You and I are on the same page on this because I was one of the first to say this. I said the Jacksonville game was irrelevant. The AFC game, when you're an NFC team trying to stack for positioning in the playoffs, what are you sweating the AFC games for? Go and win the NFC games. The AFC, it's a full half a game swing that's irrelevant. Oh, we got to rush Brock Purdy back for Jacksonville. Really?
No,
I mean, forget about the fact that you obviously did win the game anyway, but how's that working out? Not that Mac Jones hasn't been a nice piece here, but what the hell are you worried about? And this thing with the Texans, this is just the D'Amico Ryan's bragging rights game. That's it. It's largely irrelevant, especially because you took care of Atlanta the way that you did.
I'm not telling anyone to like a loss.
No.
I'm not saying be happy with it. Of course you're not happy.
All is not equal.
Overreacting to a loss this weekend would be a fool's errand. There's no reason to do it.
Again, look, I don't like complaining about wins. And I know that that's a lot of what, you know, a lot of what people do generally that are talking about games. There's a lot of complaining about wins, which I don't love. I don't think dissecting wins is really worth the time. If you want to go forensics on a loss to make sure it doesn't happen again, I'm okay with that. But in regards to the wins, there's really very little, unless you lose a major player in a win, obviously then you can talk about how that's going to be moving forward. But overall, the wins, we don't need to cry about. And the losses, they're not all created equal. The Rams games are going to mean more than your Texans and Jaguars games. Let's concentrate on that. Could there be a tiebreak with the Giants that matters? Not necessarily, but is your conference record going to matter if you're trying to stack against the Lions going for the one seed? Yeah, you better believe so. Yeah. That's going to matter. And the beauty of being the Niners with this schedule is that those NFC games that the Lions are playing outside of their division, a lot different than the NFC games the Niners playing are outside their division, because they're getting a last place team from 2024, whereas the Lions are going to get a first place team from that division. That's the beauty of what we're talking about.
This is why I'm a little worried about the Rams. The Rams are winning games that when you started looking at the schedule, you say, well, that's going to be a little tough for them. That's going to be a little tough. How about the NFC West? In a year where we keep on saying, and correctly so, that this shit is wide open, the NFC West is saying, well, when it comes to best divisions in football, why are we really not brought up instantly all the time as the default thickest division in football? The only team in football that is offering you not one, not two, but three five-win teams right now. So,
Here's what's interesting, and we don't have to do this because the playoffs do not start on Monday. But if we're looking at right now, the NFC, it is difficult to choose the best team. There's a lot, right? It's really because if you're looking at opponents and trying to carry one opponent through, because Tampa's one that sort of shows up on a lot of people and it's a good measuring stick, but even that's a little strange.
Right.
The Lions have a Packers loss and a Chiefs loss, which, you know, no one's faulting the Lions for those two. The Eagles have a Giants loss, and then now the Broncos are starting to feel themselves. So the Broncos loss makes sense. And again, you know what I think, an AFC loss, forget it. It's not nearly, but a Giants loss feels ridiculous. The Niners have that Jaguars loss, which doesn't really make a ton of sense, right? I mean, especially because the Jaguars went and just stuck. By the way, can we say one thing about Sean McVay? Whether you love him or hate him, what he can now say officially is, I would be stunned if there's a team now traveling abroad that won't do what Sean McVay just did. So,
roll out of town as fast as possible.
Dude, because this was the advantage that the Jaguars had, right? The Jaguars had done this trip more than anyone else. And I understand Liam Cohen wasn't a part of that, right? Trevor Lawrence hasn't been doing this for a decade. But frankly, the Jaguars as an organization, nobody has traveled abroad like the Jaguars. They're basically belong to London as much as they do Jacksonville.
Their equipment manager has to be bilingual. That's how much international travel they got.
They're going. When the trip says, hey, let's try something new, it's Shad Khan that gets the first phone call. We know that's happening. Right. Like that's just it. So the Jags' advantage for that game early Sunday in my new favorite window, replace Thursday Night Football with the early Sunday. Get me four slates of football on Sunday. You know, we both love that with waking up and sipping coffee for that early game. That was supposed to be, oh, wow, the Rams are coming into town, right? Well, they're not going to have any time to really understand what it's like to be in London. And the Jags, Jacksonville has perfected this thing, man. They understand what it's like to be international. The Rams said, what time do you need us there? Don't wait for us. We'll be parking when you're sitting and getting a drink at the bar. We'll park the car. We'll ride in when you're ordering appetizers. We'll be there for the dinner, and then we're taking off. To the tune of 35-7, this changes everybody's perspective on, we're going to go bring the families and hang out for a week and understand what it's like to be in Germany and London. Forget about it. We're treating it like we're going to Phoenix.
Right, exactly. We're going to just do a panty raid. We're going to show up. We're going to flip everything over in the house, and then we're going to get out of the neighborhood.
Wow, was that impressive.
That was.
I mean, Jacksonville's no slouch, and they made it look like a joke.
In a copycat groupthink league that is the NFL, I wonder if you didn't just uncover a little something there. Because I'll tell you, one of the things that you do see is a lot of the teams like embracing the Greenbrier.
Yes.
Hotel trip, you know, where, yep. Oh, West Coast team on the East Coast, you park it in Ohio or West Virginia for a little while. So you're not constantly traveling back and forth. That has been copied a few times.
And the Rams stayed in Baltimore. The beauty of it also, Damon, was we're not going to hang out in London. We're going to hang out in Baltimore. We're sitting tight and waiting, and we're treating this like a business trip. I don't care what you're visiting while you're there. I don't care what you're eating. I don't care what you got. I don't care about the photographs you got outside of 6:30 Pacific time AM Sunday to 9:30 Pacific time AM Sunday. Those are the only photos I want to bring back from that trip. That's it.
And by the way, I don't want anybody complaining about a thing here, because of doing, you know, instead of doing 3 weeks of the same three dishes and bangers and mash, you can just have a week of crab cakes. That's in Baltimore.
Baltimore, hang out. And again, so get acclimated to that. And by the way, and we're hanging out after the game, not before, right? We're not dealing with all of the BS that's going to happen with players going and exploring new things. No. After that game, we're chilling and hanging out, and then we're going. I'm sorry, but that was a big move that's going to change the perspective in this league forever on traveling abroad.
By the way, how often do you get to say, you know what's going to be better for you, more delicious, and conceptually a little safer? Baltimore.
So that's the safe place. You want a safe place to hang out?
Go to Baltimore. Baltimore. By the way, I do love a good movie title, and then the movie title, even though it's that good, you still need the parentheses.
Oh, yeah.
Your movie right now, without a doubt, is Samboni. But your parentheses? Hamantaschen on ice.
That's great.
Hamidashian on ice. There it is. Irwin, genius.
Thank you, Irwin. Thank you, Irwin. You nailed it. You absolutely nailed it. Hamidashian on ice. And wait until Aunt Marlene gets a load of that, because she's going to be pretty damn excited. I cannot wait. That is so good. That is so damn good. Also, for the Eagles, I want to tell you something.
Here's the thing. Can the Eagles beat a little stuffing out of the New York Giants this week? Can you do a little solid for the Niners?
So here's what's interesting. You'd like to think that the Eagles have everything, not necessarily to gain, but certainly not to look past in this game, because they lost to the Giants 2 weeks ago.
Right.
But think about what happened to the Giants in that game in Denver. I mean, 19-0 fourth quarter turned into a loss in a game in which you came back to take the lead again in the fourth quarter after losing the lead in a great play by Dart diving into the end zone.
Hey, but I'm not even sure you can give up 33 fourth quarter points in a win and feel good about it.
I'm trying to understand, like, win probability doesn't quite do it justice.
Right.
You just have to, it's really just about talking about the points. 19-0. How do you not get blown out when you give up 33 points after you're up 19, right? You're up 19-0. You give up 33 and you're still right there with a chance to win the game. So it was this epic meltdown that was followed also by some pretty spectacular moments for the Giants, and they lose the game. My point is, it's not like the Giants are coming in here feeling tall and mighty either. They're feeling like, wow, we got to get our shit together because of what just happened to us. I did tell, though, I have a cousin who's from Philly and a big Giants fan. Screw you, Joe. What a terrible, but I mean, you're raised by an Eagles fan. What are you doing? But okay. So he's a Giants fan, right? But I told him 2 weeks ago, Damien, you know what I said? I don't love the divisional 3 weeks apart, two games thing. I said the Giants are going to get one of those games. I think the advantage from a game prep standpoint there was with the Giants. I think getting a shot at the Eagles, bang, bang, back to back, is your best opportunity. And now it's the Giants that could sweep that series, not the Eagles. And who thought that was going to happen?
By the way, now we started a debate about London as a food town.
Okay.
Lived in London for 3 years. Food is amazing there. London is so diverse. You can get anything and more than that in the Bay Area. Well, look, I loved London too. London does not want to get into a food fight with the city of San Francisco. San Francisco will dunk on London.
Who does? What, I mean, when you're talking about food cities, eclectic food cities, I'm not going to say for one course or one type of meal, but when you're talking about the amount of different meals at an elite level that you can get in a city,
right?
That conversation is San Francisco, New York. I don't even know, like, where else do you want to go with that?
Paris,
Dubai,
Tokyo.
Dubai,
Vegas has emerged.
It's becoming that. Yeah.
But look, I will tell you this: the single greatest Indian meal I ever had in my life was in London.
Okay.
Are we saying that this is London's food? You know, I mean, that's the thing. There's a little. All I can tell you is that there is a lot of good food in London, and there is also the same menu just about in every single restaurant, and it's like bangers and mash and 4 days in Hawaii, you don't need a macadamia nut encrusted anything for a while.
And here's the problem. Can I just say this much? Let's go down this path for a second. Fish and chips. And I'd love to hear in the comments on this. So I'm going to say universally that fish and chips is good. It's good. I mean, you're frying sort of a nice fluffy fish and you're giving me French fries. Like really screwing that up is tough, but I'll say this.
What if I told you that all the heavy lifting in fish and chips is being done by the tartar sauce?
And by the way, here's what I want to tell you about tartar sauce. When I hear a place say that they've got the best fish and chips, you know what is overlooked more often than not, Damon? You can't really make a difference to my palate in regards to how you're frying those items. I mean, you can have a well-done fry, which is going to be better than a soggy one, of course. The frying is on a pretty level set area, right? I mean, you're frying the food. That's in the way you're frying it. Like, it's going to turn out golden and crispy, right? You've done it right. You're putting it in oil. This is not a Ronco dehydrator. Don't give me the bullshit on the air fryer. Like, you're putting this thing in oil and you're frying it. You're getting it right. Okay, fine. When you're telling me best fish and chips, you better do something with that tartar sauce. The only way you're going to cut through and make a difference is if you do something wildly unique with the tartar sauce, because every bite of both the fish and the chips should be in that tartar sauce, because it is at another level of any any fish and chips that you can get somewhere else, and not enough places do that. They give you the same bullshit tartar sauce or the malt vinegar. No.
Right.
Do something interesting here.
Put a little, what is that? Dill? What is it? Mm, 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 mm. What is that? What is
exactly. it? Exactly.
Your tartar sauce doesn't make me go, we're not doing it right.
We're not doing it right. And I need a tang, and the dill and the pickle is a gorgeous way to do that. But imagine, I mean, just think about all the ridiculous things you could incorporate that. Give me an amazing sauce if we're going fish and chips. There you go. Thanks, London.
This was a very important diversion in today's show. I'm glad we got to it. Getting back to week 8,
yeah,
this being a separator week. Again, Giants and Eagles. Eagles soften up the New York Giants just a little bit. Or, hey, the New York Giants do the 49ers an even bigger favor, and they beat the Eagles, which, you know, either way, the Niners, I think, win a little no matter who wins that game.
Yes.
Packers and Steelers is an interesting one. Whoa. Which team is going to be the team that wins that? We got Aaron Rodgers already waxing poetic about how he will retire one day a Green Bay Packer, and what okay. I think is one of the bigger, emptier gestures in sports.
The return, the one day signing for the retirement. Yeah, you're right. What it really comes down to, Damon, is did I really need it? You were going to be a Packer in my mind, regardless, like without right. that ceremonial did signature.
Did you need this closure? That's what it's about. You need
exactly. This. You wanted one last press conference with that logo behind you. That's fine. But I didn't need it, because in my mind, I close my eyes and I see you with that helmet. That's just what it's going to be. Can we talk about though the Steelers and the Packers one quick second?
Yeah.
Who are the Steelers? What have we gotten from them so far? And where's our level of, I mean, I think each week I'm willing to judge the Steelers on a 1 week basis. They're the one team that I'm really, it's like, what have you done for me lately? Every week I'm looking at the Steelers going, all right, who do you want to be now? They've been impressive in stretches, but because they lost five games in a row to end last season, I know it's a different quarterback, but I just cannot get comfortable. And as I told you last week, the Ravens are going to win that division.
If they are to be heard from, the conversation needs to start now.
I mean, you got to get on it. Look, you can't give away too many more, but if Lamar is giving me, if I'm getting peak Lamar, if I'm getting 90% Lamar, the Ravens are winning that division. Unless Burrow's coming back sooner than we expected, the Ravens are winning that division. I just don't buy what's happening. And it's not to say that Rodgers hasn't been playing well. Of course he hasn't. DK's been playing well, but the collective of it, I don't trust.
By the way, Iceman, looking for a little Ooh. Survivor pool advice. Ooh. D. Bruce, do you think the Niners are a good pick in my survivor pool?
Well, let's go. I'm going to go here real quick. I want to check one thing.
I'll just be totally honest with you. In all of the survivor pool, I don't know who you've already played. I don't know what is off the board for you, which is a huge part in any survivor pool understanding. But I don't like the Niners in a survivor pool.
Let me go through my rules of Survivor Pool, Damon. So generally in Survivor Pool, here's what's a smart strategy from people that have won money before. I did win money once. I had to split. We got to the last week and I split with the person I was tied with. So I did. I won. It was a nice chunk of change. We split it. We decided not to risk it. We basically hedged our bet and called it good and shook hands, which nobody loves in a bet, but that was nice. We won some money. But
you advice is over this. Samboni style.
Samboni style. The little Hamintosh. So the way to go about this, what you're supposed to do is you're not supposed to choose divisional games and you should stick to home teams. That's sort of a strat, like until you run out of those options.
Yeah.
That's a good way to go because divisional gives you a lot of, wow, we didn't see that coming. Giants Eagles a couple weeks ago. There's a lot of that'll happen, right? Cardinals always have a thorn in the side for the Niners, right? Like the worst Cardinals teams come in and give you their best game as the Niners well know, right? Like those things do happen. And then shit happens at home. Like a home team will show up once in a while and say, here we are, we're trying to define our season. So this Niners Texans game would be great. I love an out of conference, but as a home team, I love that. If this was the Texans coming in, I could see that being a good pick for Survivor. I just don't love the idea that Houston could decide, wait, we're not letting Indy run away with this. They could show up at home and really do something here. I wouldn't be stunned if that happens. So there are others on the board for Survivor. And while you speak about it, Damon, I'll give you a good Survivor. By the way, you know what a good Survivor is? And I hate to say it now. And of course, the I told you so armchair quarterback bullshit, tell me on Tuesday. But the Chargers at home against the Vikings is a good Survivor pool pick.
Right. There you go. Great pick. By the way, so I brought this up with Kruger on Wake Up. I want to bring it up with you too.
Yeah.
Rightfully so. I think we've all admired the job that Kevin O'Connell's done in Minnesota. I think we all look at the Vikings as a team that's pointed in the right direction more than the wrong direction. But I do have a follow-up question. Are you the decision maker on getting rid of Sam Darnold for J.J. McCarthy that is now Carson Wentz, which is sinking your entire ship?
Are we ready to say, is it so you're, what you're really asking is, are we allowed to take half a season and say we've already come to our conclusion that you missed Darnold? I mean, is it fair to say that basically in this breakup, you're still shedding tears about Darnold? We can admit that?
Only defensive posture that Kevin O'Connell could absolutely take in this argument would be, well, my guy got hurt. That's it. I had to go to Carson Wentz and what I saw and what I think. And, you know, a year from now when he's healthy, you'll see what I saw and you'll get it then. And if he can tell me that and sell it to me and it comes true, he was right. We were wrong. That is the odds are not in that happening.
And again, it's not just because Darnold didn't retire. So the easy part of this argument is, I mean, if we're going to court with this argument, you could literally just run tape from Seattle Darnold, right? You could just show, even in a loss, in that Tampa loss, he made his greatest play of the season. I mean, Darnold has stacked a lot of I'm still that guy this season for a Seattle team that frankly was not completely out of sorts last season, but eventually it eroded on them and Darnold has them in position now where they are talking to the Rams and the Niners about, by the way, we can have a foothold in this division also. So when you've got the Darnold tape on top of McCarthy watching Carson Wentz in a game where you're not competitive whatsoever against the Chargers team that looked awful against the Colts 4 days earlier, here's the problem. Doing today's show, Damon, I don't think there's an argument. I think your only argument can be in the future. This is really about if J.J. McCarthy wins this division next season, then you're saying we couldn't have made the investment. That's it, right? We couldn't have committed the dollars to Darnold knowing that McCarthy was going to be the guy that we're showing you
now. Well, and look, Darnold could still very much turn into a pumpkin here, and now we're not saying, oh, he is definitely the one that got away.
Yeah, but October 24, 2025, I love to push back on things you're saying, but I would just say October 24, 2025, there's some explaining to do.
Yeah, right now, you got some splaining to do.
Splaining to do because... Yeah, and you know what it is? I mean, think about it. It's just there was something symbiotic about the two of them also, right? O'Connell's coach of the year, Darnold's up for comeback player of the year, right? There was just like, I mean, frankly, he was in the MVP conversation at one point last season. It was so, they were in lockstep. And, you know, I'll make it a Philly thing a little bit. I mean, the Eagles, they had, Foles came back the season after they won the Super Bowl. And admittedly, there was a little bit of a conversation. Foles got a huge contract with Jacksonville after that. The Eagles essentially did not make him a real offer to be, you know, the backup that you knew could take over if Wentz. They made the commitment to Wentz. It's tough to say now because the Eagles did find a way to win a Super Bowl with like an entirely new regime, which is kind of wild. You would have thought, like, if you told me that day the Eagles beat Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, that they were going to win another one, you know, 5 or 6 years later, you'd be like, yeah, of course, Wentz won them a Super Bowl. To think that that didn't happen at all and it wasn't Foles or Wentz goes to show you how quickly Peterson. Exact or Peterson, right. It goes to show you how quickly this league just sort of molts its skin and comes back as something else. But I'm sorry, right now, you're just absolutely right.
5 years is an NFL lifetime.
Yes.
For sure. Again, week 8 is when the cream starts to separate.
Yeah.
And today's thumbnail has a whole bunch of coaches in conflict at the bottom of it. You know, Daboll is one of them. We got, you know, Mike McDaniel wearing the crown of who might be next now that we've got the Brian Callahan decision from Tennessee. Then you've got Sala and, you know, Shanahan just kind of whistling through the graveyard. They should be dead by now, but they're all right. They're still in this conversation. As a matter of fact, they're sitting at the head of the table in this conversation.
Head of the table. They are handing out the agenda to the meeting. They are running it. Yeah, they are running it right now.
There is no 6-win team in the NFC. Not one. So 5 is the most we see. They have as much as anyone.
And right when Atlanta was starting, right when we were about to tell you that Atlanta was really looking like something, they came out and ended that. And again, even the Tampa thing, you can say, okay, on the road, Mac Jones. I mean, there's a lot that you can say about that game as well. So the Niners are feeling pretty good.
I got Jim Harbaugh on there. I think we could have put McVay up there. We could have put Sirianni up there. We could put Mike Vrabel up there. It's time to start talking about Mike Vrabel.
It might be. It really might be. And I just, in a division with the Bills, it's tough for me to go there with the Patriots. Like, it's just because the path is such that I always ask myself in the AFC, all right, close your eyes. Do I see this team beating Chiefs, Bills, Lamar in a playoff game, right? I just go there, no matter what, I just go there. And that's one that I can't envision. Last year, I'll admit, you know what I could see last season? When the Steelers beat the Ravens in the first matchup last season, I said to Siciliano at the time, I could see the Steelers beating the Chiefs in an ugly playoff game. I could see, like, there's a scenario in which I could see that. They're a team that I don't really understand how they win. And so, like, I could feel like they could kind of do it in two ugly ways. That was something I could close my eyes and picture. I don't know that I'm there with New England.
I'm glad you brought that up, because behind all of those coaches that I just mentioned in the thumbnail, coming through the smoke is Andy Reid. Let me just tell you, man, this Kansas City Chiefs team, the Dewey defeats Truman headline might have been a little premature. They still aren't who they used to be, who among us are. The last of the Kansas City Chiefs has not been heard from. Not even close. So we have a league that is still undefined by a true lead sled dog. But the Chiefs are the Chiefs are still reminding you they're pulling this sled. They could be the lead dog when it's all said and done. And, you know, we get back to survivor pools a little bit later on. I mean, how many people went down big thinking the Chiefs early in the season were money? They start 0-2. I'm looking at them now. So here we go. Here we go.
If we're talking separation, Damon, if we're talking separation, and I know we're going to get into a few of the other games this weekend, but this is what I'd love to do. I love to say, picture yourself with a Super Bowl ticket of the following teams. And I'll call it Noah's Ark here. All right. Like, who are the teams you'd want on Noah's Ark if you had that ticket? And then who deserves to be in the conversation? If I told you that you had Super Bowl winner, and these are the teams that you had.
Okay. How many teams am I allowed to put on this?
How about this? I'm okay. We're going to add to it. I'm going to say there's five. I'm going to say you could put five teams on the, I'll take this versus the field to win the Super Bowl, not to appear. To win the Super Bowl, there are five teams. I can tell you who mine are pretty easily. And it's weird because I don't even know that it's changed that much from when the season started, because I would still take Lions, Eagles, Bills, Chiefs. And right now you gotta say the Niners. I mean, I'm going to say Niners. And the Chargers, look, the one advantage the Chargers have is divisionally right now, they've got tiebreak over Denver and Kansas City. So the Chargers are actually in the conversation for the one seed in the AFC. They are. I'm sorry, you may not see it right now. It's tough to see through the woods, but guess what?
Tampa? Tampa didn't make the handful?
No, I'm sorry. The Tampa-Detroit thing, you talk about separation? Wasn't that net amongst boys in that, right?
A little bit.
That looked like, all right, that playoff game would be in Detroit, and that's kind of what it'll be tough to wash that from my mind, won't it?
Right, you're not taking that in the survivor pool.
That's it. You're just like, I can't, why do I see Tampa now as being a team that can beat Detroit in the playoffs when the most recent thing I've seen in my mind is Detroit had no issue with Tampa. Zero. And they were injured. They were injured, but they were injured against the Niners also, and they looked great. So I'm sorry, I don't buy Tampa as a winning an NFC championship in Detroit level of play. I don't see it.
By the way, the only other, like, keep an eye on that, because there could be something there in terms of the direction both these teams are traveling and an element of that looked a lot more winnable when the schedule was printed than it does right now. A sneaky, potentially interesting game here in week 8 is Buffalo at Carolina.
Yeah,
Carolina, wow. Dude, Carolina is putting together a decent handful of games here, and Buffalo is in a little bit of, I don't want to say scramble mode, but trying to hold on to what their reputation is right now in the AFC. This is a bigger game than it certainly looked like. How about this? This would have been one of those Now you can take that road team in the survivor pool. You know, take the Bills on the road against Carolina. Sure. That feels good. Doesn't I don't think it's just as in the barn as it looked.
Well, do you remember we talked about this at the time, the Saints and Bills game, which was in Buffalo, by the way. Mm-hmm. Saints took the lead late in that game. A penalty did wipe it off the board, but the Saints were absolutely game in that game against Buffalo, and I could see Carolina at home. Again, Carolina at home, were the game that we can't erase is the 30-0 Carolina Atlanta. That game in Carolina is one of those that just, all right, Atlanta season we can sort of comprehend, and then that game tells us no. They're like, and that's why they're not in any Atlanta will not be in a conversation for me all season. I'm sorry. They win that division and host a playoff game. I'm not, I promise you, Damon, we will speak. I will not take Atlanta in a game that matters this season because of what I saw.
Historically a good position to take.
It's exactly. I don't think I'm going to be on the wrong end of that. Go ahead and prove me, right? Prove me the other way. But Atlanta based, I'm just telling you, based on one outcome I saw, that's one where you can't give me the if not for that game on the Carolina 30-0. You can't. It happened. I saw it.
Week 8 will be very entertaining. We also got ourselves, here we go. Game 1 of the World Series
tonight.
I'm going
to pick up something right now. Look at this.
How do we not have a Drake Kendrick Lamar bet?
We absolutely should. This is my Angels game used Vladimir Guerrero senior bet.
There it is. Right now. 58 ouncer.
It is. This thing, by the way, who swung a more intimidating bat than Vladdy Guerrero in regards to hitting a ball on a bounce? Well, I mean, Vladdy's one of those guys who's got a hit on an intentional walk. Back when you didn't just send a guy to first, you had to throw four pitches. Vladdy just reached out, bang, got one. I love that the Blue Jays are here. I don't know. I think we should put it here in this chat. We should let people tell us who's going to win in how many games, and you and I should be held to the same standard. Part of me wants to say the Dodgers' best chance at being beaten was going to be Philadelphia. A lot of people said that was the World Series, and they only lost one game to the Phillies, including sweeping them in Philly. And that'll be their only blemish, that they're going to now sweep the Blue Jays as well. Part of me wants to be that bold and to just say they're going to crush everyone. They lost one game to Philly, and that's it. And then part of me says, man, Toronto can swing it. Like, could this be interesting? Like, Toronto can swing the bat. And then I'm going to tell you, after I hear from you, where I want to watch this game. I'm going to tell you about the coolest place that you can watch this game in the world. Okay. But
so I am, Doyers in 5, gentlemen sweep. I do think Toronto can get one. If I am Toronto, I am pitching around whoever the hot hitter is. I mean, if it's Otani, send him in the first. If it's Freddie, he's going to first. If it's Mookie, he's going to first. And then you're going to see Max Muncy be named World Series fucking MVP because he got it done. And that's the thing. The Dodgers just don't stop coming anywhere now that they've got starting pitching and they have to worry about their bullpen a little less. I just think it feels insurmountable. I think this is Doyers in 5. Back-to-back champions, and it will be baseball's first back-to-back champion in 25 years.
Wow, think about that. Think about that since the Yanks, right? And by the way, the last time Canada won a World Series was a back-to-back champ. Toronto won 92 and 93. Of course, that Joe Carter moment against Mitch Williams, I'll never forget.
By the way, anyone who was talking about that George Springer home run as the biggest home run in Blue Jays postseason history, need to be fired directly into the sun. From the top of the CN Tower. Good God.
How do you walk off a World Series and not end that conversation?
Something only a 28-year-old would say.
Yes. And even way to go not knowing anything about
it. Here's the craziest thing in the world. You would think that with the totally unbalanced pay scale and the very much accepted as standard conversation, you can buy a championship in baseball. All you need to do is spend dollar amount X, you're in the playoffs, and then from there, you got a shot. Only the incredibly wealthy have any shot. And there is an element of truth to that, but there's also another element of truth that since 2000, Major League Baseball has crowned more unique champions over the last 25 years than any other major sport that is capped. 16 different champions in baseball, 14 on hockey, 13 in the NFL, 12 in the NBA. Major League Baseball actually has had the most parity in terms of champions at the end of the year in a sport where it feels like we're always bashing it because it has no parity. It's actually the other way around. Like, let's not let reality get in the way of these spicy hot takes people are making. It doesn't make sense, but it's true.
I love that you said that. And of course, the Dodgers could sort of buck that trend. If the Dodgers now give us a back-to-back and even just talk appearances, if the Dodgers are in the World Series this year, and again, big if, but obviously if they were to do it again next year, now all of a sudden you'd start to say, wow, we're seeing the same thing. Hockey, as much as you think there's parity there, and you do, hockey's had Tampa show up 3 years in a row in the Stanley Cup final, followed by Florida showing up in the Stanley Cup final 3 years in a row. So that, and frankly, their opponent's been twice 2 years in a row also. So that right. goes to show you that, that's a little bit on its head. And that, and in that sport, the spending is quite even. There's not humongous differences in the spend in hockey, and in baseball there is. I love that stat. And by the way, fans, don't get caught in the minutia of who's spending money. I mean, you know, look at the Dodgers lineup. Obviously they got three MVPs. Yeah, they're spending money. They're also winning. And there's a lot of teams that spend a lot of money and don't get to this level. So don't give me fatigue on the Dodgers when they have, by the way, the greatest player in baseball. Look at the freaking Angels, who had the best player in baseball, plus the other best player in baseball, and never sniffed a thing.
Right.
The Dodgers have Shohei. The first 2 years they have Shohei. He has a historic season that we've never seen offensively. And then he has the greatest postseason game that you're ever going to see in your entire fucking life. And they're in the World Series again. I mean, that's spending the right money. And frankly, I'm here to see it. And I'm here for it as many times as you want to give it to me. That I'll take Shohei in the World Series, having at bats that matter. When your best player is playing in those games, that's when your league matters. Patrick Mahomes is better for the NFL because he's playing in the divisional round and the championship round and the Super Bowl. That's what you want to see. Your best players playing in those games.
I'll tell you what the Dodgers don't have. They don't have the reigning college World Series champion manager coming in to fix everything the way that the San Francisco Giants do. Screw you, LA. You didn't even see that one coming, did you?
Back to the rivalry that exists only in the minds of people in San Francisco and San Diego, right? LA is in a competition, as I've said before, with New York, London, Dubai, and Paris. And San Francisco and San Diego keep thinking they're in this big competition with LA, and LA has just never even acknowledged that that's happening.
Beat the Lakers, so pipe that down a little.
I love it. I love that. And it's not that it doesn't happen. What I mean is the whole city. What I mean is sports does prove it wrong often. I mean, I'm sorry, the Giants have the dynasty. If we're talking about a dynasty in baseball recently, guess who it was? Bruce Bochy and the Giants.
Right.
That's the dynasty.
SoFi Stadium, or as we call it, Candlestick South.
Yeah. So there has been there that what I mean is it's so funny that even in that, I mean, San Francisco could sweep LA in sports and still the city of LA laughs at this idea that they're somehow jealous of San Francisco. It just doesn't happen. They just, it becomes irrelevant. That part, for some reason, LA is just able to say, yeah, we don't care that much. When you know they do, but they just give off that air that it does not matter. But this World Series, if you're going to say five for Dodgers, I guess to be just interesting, I'm going to say Dodgers in four. I'm going to stick to the fact that the Phillies got the one win, that's it, and the Dodgers are going to rip everybody else. But I am excited to see Toronto really give this a shot. And since 93, that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see Vladdy's son. For someone who grew up loving Vladdy on the Expos and then getting him here in Southern California as an MVP, to see his son who rooted when Vladdy won the year I got this bat was the year Vladdy won the home run derby in San Francisco, Damon. Remember, Vladdy won the home run derby that year when San Francisco hosted the All-Star game. That's when he won the home run derby. His son is rooting him on. It almost looks like Dusty Baker's son that JT Snow's picking up off her home plate. That's the age he basically is. And now he's in the World Series.
Well, that's pretty cool. And first of all, I will always have a special spot in my heart for the Montreal Expos
as
a memory.
Yes.
So I'm always going to love the Montreal Expos, no matter who you are. You could be Pat Listash. I don't care who you are. I'm going to love you. So what I saw this is the little like 4-year-old Vladimir Guerrero walking around, and he looks like he's got body by Ewok.
Yes.
Like, this kid is just thick as fuck from the minute he's born, and you can tell this little kid is running around wearing some major leaguer's glove, his dad's backup glove, which is the size of his entire torso. And he's standing there on the line, you know, as the national anthems are playing up, and it's just adorable. And the minute you have kids and you start seeing this father son passing of the torch thing in sports, it hits you differently. It really does. You know, I promised myself I'd never be one of those guys who would say, you don't really know what love is until you have a kid. But there's truth. There is truth to that. And when I see those little Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Montreal Expos photographs, it's just, it's fantastic. And to think, yeah, this is really happening. It's unbelievable. And he's playing for a Canadian team just like his dad. I mean, it's pretty cool. It really
is. Awesome. It is. I'm sorry. It's awesome. Plus you got Bichette's son there. You had Biggio's son there at one time. I mean, it was like all of our memories were getting relived through Toronto.
But unfortunately, we are sending the single greatest American athlete of all time, Shohei Ohtani.
It's just amazing.
Canada. So good luck with it. You can't stop the Shohei. You really, really can't.
And I want to see, you said Muncy, I want to see Shohei as MVP. So I'll just say it. I'll speak that into existence. I want to see World Series MVP Shohei Ohtani. I'd love it. I just think, imagine if that means he did something that we all dropped our jaw yet again for. But and thank you for sending me the single greatest tweet of all time Friday night. That was very funny and so true. The kids that are going to be named Shohei that have no idea what that really means.
So a buddy of mine, I don't care how inappropriate this is, it's funny. We all know that the Dodgers have an awful lot of Mexicans in their fan base.
There is a very endearing term in LA to call the Dodgers the Doyers. It's great. I mean, it's part of the heritage of Los Angeles. I mean, it really is just embodying what this city is really predicated on. It's really beautiful.
The text that I shared with Sam is a decade from now, there's going to be a whole bunch of kids who are going to have to be explained to them why their names are Shohei Rodriguez.
it's true. I mean, it is true. It speaks to what you said, the greatest American. And by the way, he's now in the conversation. When we talk greatest American baseball player named Shohei Ohtani, I think that game last Friday night puts him in a conversation now of greatest athlete of all time. Shohei Ohtani is an active player that's in the Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky conversation to me.
Well, what do we need to qualify for greatest of all time?
I mean, the accomplishment, okay. I mean,
is it about champions won? Is it about on-field performance? Is it about the way you made the planet feel? You know, there's a lot of different things that go into it. And I would just say right now, Ohtani is still deficient in some of them, but he has lapped so many other people in so many other categories that, yeah, he is entering a conversation that is reserved for the half of 1% of the half of 1%.
The fact that we're even speaking it out loud means that we're already at that point. And if he doesn't win the argument, that's still okay. That's a pretty great place to be. Again, right. when you are compared, much like LeBron, oh, I hate LeBron. Yeah, you hate LeBron when I bring up one other guy, right? Like you think LeBron sucks when I bring up one other person on the planet. So the fact that Ohtani's in this conversation with two other people, I'll say this. Gretzky has championships and has the idea that he lapped the field and everything, right? Having more points than anyone has goals or assists is, you know, or having, probably, sorry, right. having more assists than anyone else has goals and assists is just right. one of those that like puts everybody out of the conversation. And then MJ has the 6 of 6, no losses with all the MVPs in those series. It's like the perfect resume, if you will. But
Sam, bad news. You're only the second smartest person in the world.
Right. You suck. You're dumb. You're dumb, right? You're dumb. You're dumb. In this room with this guy, you're dumb.
You're no Einstein.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks.
You're no Einstein. You didn't come up with a theory of relativity. So, you know, shut up.
This guy sucks in comparison. It's just like, stop it. So Otani's in that conversation. We don't even have to settle the debate now. Just appreciate that he's in that conversation.
There is no doubt that you and I could do a show that is twice as long as the live stream that we're already in on the nightmare that exploded all over the NBA.
Oh my God.
48 hours into a season. So everything that the morning shows wanted to sell you about Victor Wembanyama being a one of one about, well, I guess Curry then sort of say, it's amazing how basketball say basketball with yes. Curry hitting a big, of course, Steph Curry,
of course he did.
The whole of course fucking he. League. Of course he did. What else would he do? Of course, Steph Curry gave you something other than the worst topic you've had dropped on you as a commissioner, Adam Silver. Of course, he bailed you out. So I'm just going to ask you, where do you want to start this? Because we could go 300 different directions in this. Do you want to start with Billups or Rozier? Let's just start with that.
I want to start with Billups because the idea of a head coach being arrested, an active head coach being arrested, is just such a moment in sports that, I mean, am I wrong, Damon? Has that ever happened?
No.
Handcuffs on an active head coach. It's just like, I can't even wrap my head around that.
I mean, so he wasn't the head coach. Jerry Sandusky, after he raped all those little boys in Happy Valley, got led away in cuffs.
Yep.
But active head coach arrested.
I mean, there's coaches that have been
you're telling me Lou Piniella got into a bar fight once, you know, but like arrested by the FBI, perp walked.
Are you Lou Piniella? Are you Chauncey Billups? Yes. Come with us. I mean so I want to talk about how amazing that is to see. I also, and the mob thing, I just want to say, like, I'll go to my last point. I want to get to the point where this is made into a movie, because it's going to be. This has layers that you and I cannot even unpack, that is going to need to be JFK level movie, right? I need Scorsese, Oliver Stone on this immediately, because it's got to be at that level. The onion.
How do you know Rozier was throwing that game? Well, look at his on-court movement. It was back and to the left.
To the left.
Back to the left.
I mean, that's what I really want to see, a forensic version of this, because the timeline is so fascinating. And, you know, you can't tell me that Gilbert Arenas doesn't play a part in this. The fact that Damon Jones.
He's staying like a canary.
And I want to see that, right? I want to see when this story truly gets told. I want to see it. Yes, it'll be a great book, but I really want to see it. I think it'll be at that level. I think it'll be the greatest sports movie of all time, the way it'll tie different genres and different people into how interesting it is because of what it entails.
It's like you take Hoop Dreams, Goodfellas, and Rounders,
and exactly,
you put it all together, and what do you got?
Molly's Game, right? Like, there's a Molly's Game piece to this. Just Donnie Brasco, right? I mean, there's just, it's like, there's so Maverick much
with Mel Gibson and James Brolin James Garner.
There's so much to it that, I mean, even 21 with Kevin Spacey, right? Which I think, which was the book was
Jodie Foster, when we still thought she might be straight, she was selling that.
It really. I love it. I got to say, as someone who just enjoys content, I love it. I also want to say that I just don't have, it's hard for me to get upset about gambling. I just want to admit that. It's hard for me to speak from a place where I can say, how dare somebody, like, you know, winning money on a game or even trying to gain an edge there. I mean, every field has this idea that you could gain an edge. And of course, going to the people who are closest to the games is the way to do that. And frankly, you know, people that were good, I mean, people that set lines at casinos, you don't think they're getting information? I mean, they're getting information.
Look at it this way. Why would you invest with any stockbroker who didn't have inside information?
That's like, you want to feel like the person who's telling you to put your money somewhere.
Why am I listening to King's post game? Because Samboni has some inside information for me.
I'll give you something you can't get somewhere else, right? That's essentially, that's the differentiator in everything that we do. And so somebody that was smarter than everybody else here had an idea and put it into motion. And like I said, all these things are going to be connected and it's all going to come out. And I think the Damon Jones thing makes it really fascinating. Obviously, you know, the idea that we even get to say LeBron's name, that this story even gets to just whisper his name, makes it that much more interesting.
You know, LeBron under his breath, he's like, motherfucker, I mean, really, this is the price of fame right here, right? I mean,
it's really, really spectacularly fascinating. I love that what you said about Steph. I mean, Steph Curry, it'll ultimately be when we go back and look at Steph's career, he threw his mouthpiece in the crowd once, right? That's the one blemish.
Right. That is the on-court equivalent of Obama wearing a tanned mustard suit in terms of controversy.
That's it. Steph Curry, that's it. Steph Curry, it just continues. I've said it before. Steph Curry is in my conversation about greatest player in the league because of what you like to say, most influential, right? I mean, the way he has changed the game, Steph will be that for me. Steph will always be in conversation, and I'll say it. Steph is in conversation of best ever to me because of that. Because if you picked out of a lineup who is going to be best, he'd never be the guy in that draft for you. And yet he's in that conversation. And I love that. And this speaks to it also, because the only thing that would make this story more stunning is if Steph Curry was in handcuffs.
You're right. Don't even say that out loud.
Of course.
But I will say this. The most fascinating element has yet to even appear. We got over 30 people now in trouble. We're going to have dudes rolling on each other. At what point is there an NBA executive sitting at this poker table? At what point is there a network executive sitting at this poker table? Who is sitting around the poker table? And if indeed, like the indictment is saying, and Chauncey's innocent until proven guilty, but they're saying he was in on it. He wasn't just the face in terms of luring people into the game. He got a cut at the end of the night once they split the losses. If that is who Chauncey is, he's going to prison and he will be murdered by the mob while he's in there because he just rolled on the mob. And that is not, that is not a survivable thing. And what I also think is going to be fascinating is, what did Chauncey owe the mob? What did Rozier owe the mob? Because neither of these guys is doing this over, oh, I owe somebody $15,000. That's chump change. This is, it's got to be a severe element of in cahoots, owing something that you cannot give the mob. And they say, well, this is then how you make it right, motherfucker. And this is what you're going to do for us.
Another guy who I heard this point, actually, John Ireland brought up this point here at ESPN LA, because he was speaking to Ipe's bookie, the guy who I'll call him Shohei's bookie so people can understand it.
Another thing was, Chauncey Billups needs to hire a translator immediately. Yeah. What if Terry Rozier walked in with a Japanese interpreter going,
never rat on your friends and always keep your mouth shut. I mean, that's really, it's a glorious statement there by you, Damon. But so Ipe, who is Shohei's interpreter, the guy who's going to jail, he's going to go to jail for 1 year because he gave everything up. When they were coming after him, he gave him all the books and he gave him everything. John Ireland brought up when he was interviewing this guy who was Shohei's bookie, and I don't have his name in front of me right now, but John Ireland asked a great question. Do you think after your year in jail that you could ever be in a catch me if you can situation where the leagues are hiring you to speak to the teams about not getting in trouble in regards to gambling at this level when you're a professional? And it is interesting, right? To think of the Leonardo DiCaprio character in that story who comes back to work for the FBI. Could this guy who was Shohei and Ipe's bookie be someone who now is counted on to spot other people who might be doing this? And in regards to
who becomes the police consultant.
Correct. So as the consultant, they're going to be talking to him through this story also. That's a guy who I think he could have them because guess what? He speaks to people who are moving large sums on games. He knows people who have the money to make this difference. He'll have information. And to your point about which exec is sitting at the table, I go to immediately, all right, in the NBA, we've got people in cups now. Will all of the leagues now have this level of involvement? Will we find the equivalent of someone like this in every league? Is it all coming for all the leagues?
There are two subcultures which march through every professional locker room. Subcultures of pussy and subcultures of gambling. I know that that is very curt and aggressive to say it like that, but that's what it is. If there is a fight in a locker room, in any locker room, it is over one of three things: playing time, women, money. Money owed in a gambling situation. That is what 90% of your, any locker rooms, fights are over. Why did Gilbert Arenas bring gold-plated weapons into the locker room? It was gambling. That's what
was. Where's my money?
Where's my money? And by the way, yeah, Gilbert's involved. There is, even here's the thing. This is Cosa Nostra. Gilbert was apparently involved with the Israeli mob.
It's going to be, again, it's going to need to be a movie.
By the way, it's so LA.
It's perfect. It's so, you're right. No, this movie is going to, it's going to be long. Everyone's going to complain about the length of this movie. It might be a limited series. It's going to be done so well, and it's going to explain this, and it's going to tie it in a way. And there'll be people who claim that it's not true, and it's going to be true, and it's going to be glorious.
You know how, you know, you roll credits on any movie and you might want to stay for the end scene, what they end the thing with. Here's how that movie has to end. Sammy, I'm sharing this with you. Here's how the movie has to end, because just when you think there's no way that you could put any cherry on top of this story, there is no way on the same day this story breaks in the NBA that we can like full circle this thing somehow. Oh yeah? Well then I guess you haven't seen this.
The opener in NBA history. But this one, before we go to break, this falls in the category of you just can't make that stuff up. Oh, Aaron Gordon has made 10 three-pointers tonight, tying Terry Rozier in 2020 for the most in a season opener in NBA history. I kid you not. We'll take a break. When we come back, the fun.
Isn't that unbelievable? Aaron Gordon ties a record set by Terry Rozier the same day Terry Rozier is led away in handcuffs for rigging game. I guess Terry had the over that night. But isn't that something? By the way, one more thing. Again, since we're not here making friends, we might as well just thoroughly not make friends. Yeah. The other like funniest thing I saw about this yesterday, Sammy, it's this. Babylon B says WNBA players assure FBI they weren't missing layups to throw games. They just suck at basketball.
It's a great bit. I mean,
I'm sorry. We ain't here to make friends. We're here to tell jokes.
No, here's something in the look. Something can be insensitive and funny. Both, right? Two things can be true at the same time.
I mean, I think you just described my number one personality trait: insensitive and funny.
Things can be true. Two things can be true at the same time.
Two things can be equally true. Thank you. Okay, so are you ready for a little history?
I really am.
We are set up with the World Series, Week 8. Legalese, court cases.
We've done it all. And in fact, you know what? If this story takes another step, maybe we may have to invite our lawyer Drew Sherman back on to explain the layers of this. Because already I will say, impressive to hear the lawyer speak about Chauncey. And I almost want to ask a lawyer, Drew, in this case, what is it like to know when you're speaking about the honesty and the integrity of somebody, and then it comes back to just be so untrue, and you're left with that comment in your mouth?
By the way, in case Drew is wondering how Colorado's season's going this year, has he been on the show yet? I mean, all I can tell you is that the booking or lack thereof says an awful lot about the state of that Buffalo football team right now.
Well, after you retire those two jerseys, Damon, it's hard, right? You take those two legends, right?
Shador's in the rafters. What's left to talk about?
Exactly.
Wouldn't it be funny if Colorado decided to also retire Dylan Gabriel's number?
That's one thing I want to say, by the way, Tua is so bad. So my just saying this week is, I don't think I'm going to trust a left-handed quarterback again in my life. I can't watch Penix. I can't watch Dylan Gabriel. I cannot watch left-handed quarterbacks anymore without thinking it's going to go wrong. Obviously, Steve Young is where he is, but I cannot watch left-handed quarterbacks anymore and just think it's going to go, like, something's going to go wrong. It's ruined it for me forever. That's it. Just saying.
There you go. I like it. Just saying. I didn't prepare a just saying for this.
It doesn't matter. Just nod and let's go. I'm excited.
Well, actually, I got a just saying to why today I'm going to be screaming internally all day long. That'll be part of today in history. But we begin, as always, with our happy birthdays. We say happy birthday to a man who stole every scene he was in A Fish Called Wanda. Kevin Klein turned 78 years old today. A very proud Indiana University alumni, if you don't mind. Kevin Klein will be rooting for the number 2 ranked Indiana Hoosiers against UCLA. By the way, screw ULA, this weekend in Bloomington. I think the Fox Big Noon kickoff is in Bloomington this
weekend.
Which
is pretty awesome. Mr. Manfringenson.
He's a very famous footballer, and I can prove it because I know who he is and I don't watch soccer at all. Wayne Rooney, 40 years old today. Hey, maybe this is a little something in the atmosphere for the city of Toronto and the Blue Jays.
I remember when Wayne Rooney, by the way, came to LA, he joining the MLS. I mean, that was a humongous deal at the time. I mean, I'll give the MLS credit for going out and just.
Wasn't Zoltan a big NBA?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. I got to give the MLS credit for that. They know how to go grab a huge superstar and bring him into that league.
Hey, what could be a better harbinger of things to come for the Toronto Blue Jays than today is Drake's 39th birthday?
Ooh. I do like it. It's unfortunate. Drake, outside of the Kawhi shot against the Sixers in that championship, it just feels like it always ends up going wrong for Drake on the biggest stage, right?
Yeah. All I can tell you is that, the minute Drake showed up in Kentucky games, Calipari is like, oh, I'm going to Arkansas.
Yeah, see you later.
If you can fuck up Kentucky basketball.
Yes.
You might be one of my favorite rappers of all time, if you don't mind me saying. Screw Kentucky. Yes. Okay, it is Jaylen Brown, proud Cal alum, Boston Celtic. He's got to do it all on his own this year. He's 29. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 26 years old today. Happy birthdays all around. Today in 1861, the first transcontinental telegram was sent, basically bringing an end to the Pony Express right there. How about that? I wonder what the first telegram,
What was it? Yeah. Hey, right. Test. I think it was test. Right, test. Was it test or was nothing. It right? Or was it hello? Or is it hey? Sup. S-U-P. I think it was sup.
What's going on? None.
Sup.
Did they have sup in 1861?
Why not? It was supper. It was short for dinner. It was supper.
Today, by the way, you want to talk about Crazy Annie? There's no doubt this chick fucks. In 1901, Annie Edison Taylor, at the age of 63, became the first person to go over Niagara Falls in a barrel.
Wow.
That chick fucks.
We have you ready. We have you ready for this trip. We feel like you'll be perfectly safe in this. Trust us. You literally brought me a barrel. Yeah, Annie, don't worry. You're going to be fine.
Annie. It's a wooden barrel. What could go wrong? Here's the thing. Is water. It watertight? We won't know until we pushed you over the falls. But can I get out if I survive? We won't know that either. You ready?
Good luck. Here we go. Like, 3-2.
Strap it on. Let's go.
3-2 and.
Fuck yeah. Annie Edison Taylor. That chick parties. 1929, a record 12,894,650 shares of stock got traded. It caused real financial panic. The crash of 29, Black Thursday, today. A 40-hour work week was officially became the standard here in America today in 1940, the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938. This is why I always really enjoyed my time in radio, because the 40-hour work week was something that I thoroughly rejected. No, I want to do my show and then go back home.
It's nice.
I was allowed to do that for years.
That's pretty awesome. And then I'll say on the other side of that, for years, I mean, overtime was just a humongous, it's like anything you could stack onto what I was doing at the time when I was making very little money when we started in San Francisco radio. I welcomed it, right? The idea of time and a half, which is like, yeah, I'm into that.
Today in 1946, a camera aboard the V2 number 13 rocket took the very first photograph of Earth from outer space. Oh. The big blue marble that everyone who wants to insist is a flat earther says this picture doesn't really exist. Incorrect. The Earth is a sphere. We have this thing called science. And the minute you stop rejecting it, society can move forward. Thank you. Thank you very, very much for doing that.
Yeah, we've seen it.
Speaking of big moments, today in 1992, Joe Carter did it. Today in 1992, Jays beat the Braves.
Wow.
Walked off Mitch Williams.
Yes. Yeah. So wait, this was the Braves or the Phillies? If it was the Braves one, that was 92, not 93.
Excuse me. Oh, you're right. This is right. This is Braves. This is not Joe Carter walking off Mitch Williams. I got my Toronto memories.
That's okay. That's all right. They beat him back to back. And they beat, by the way, that Braves team that everyone said didn't win enough. That was one of the reasons why.
This is the Vicky Jansmoats game.
Yes.
Okay. Today in 2003, supersonic passenger service ended as British Airways flew its last ever Concorde flight. Sam, this is, I think, the only moment in history where the better, faster, more efficient was retired in the name of, let's keep doing it the slow way. It's really weird. I understand that there was a price point and cost prohibitive and blah, 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 blah. It's amazing that supersonic travel isn't now like the standard of all air travel.
This is equivalent to me. If electric cars are wiped out, electric cars, clearly now the prices are dropping and more manufacturers are not making them. Exactly your point is what I would say about electric cars. Something that is more efficient and makes your life easier, not being incorporated into our day-to-day lives, is hilarious to me. You could have a gas station in your driveway, never having to go to one of those disgusting stores where you're putting a gasket into your car, waiting for the gas to pump. Like all of these things, and yet that technology may not catch exactly to what you just said. Yes.
By the way, Smiley Dan is saying, seeing Niagara Falls in person and then thinking of these people is my... By the way, yeah, that's true. You go see Niagara Falls in person, the first thing you see, you're like, that is big, that is powerful.
And step back, right? Like not step in, but step back.
Right. Oh, look at Christopher saying, happy Pablo Sandoval game day.
Oh, yes.
Pablo Sandoval game day. Yeah, you look at the list. A lot of really good game ones, right? Happened today.
Well, three home runs. I thought of Pablo when Shohei did what he did, and it's a good question for the chat right now, is what Shohei did essentially, it's Pablo Sandoval. You would have to be Pablo Sandoval and Madison Bumgarner at the same time to have the game that Shohei had last Friday night. You'd have to be those two people in the same body.
Yeah. Which an argument could be made that Shohei Ohtani's better than either of those in the body that he's in.
Yes.
And I love Bumgarner, but Shohei Ohtani, the hitter, compared to Pablo Sandoval, we'll never say Pablo's name again. God bless you, Pablo.
It's over. But congrats, Pablo. What you did is, three in a World Series, forget about it. Yes.
Speaking of it's over, our final today in history has to deal with me.
Oh, D.
Today in 2005, October 24th, 2005, I made my debut as host of Sports Phone on KNBR. My radio career, which I no longer have, started 20 years ago today. I, in my mind, had my 20th anniversary show planned and, what I thought might be. Look at it this way. What was supposed to be happening today? And how about this? Sam, here's the one thing I got. I'd like to think that you would have been on either show anyway, because that's how much I love you, brother. But today would have been my 20-year on-air anniversary. Oh, I will never not be pissed off that they took that away from me. Because how many professional, uninterrupted 20-year moments do you get? They interrupted my damn moment, Sammy.
It was yours to have. You had a special career. I mean, your career went so full circle that you actually beat KNBR. Your dream was to be on KNBR. You did so much, you actually ended up beating KNBR, which is wild to think. And I was there the night that Lee Hammer first ever told you that, yes, you in fact can go in there and host the show tomorrow night at Jen Violet's wedding. I mean, that was such a moment. I mean, Damon, your career on the radio in that way, I will never forget. Obviously, we were roommates. You went to ESPN. It was going to be a big deal. You were going to make a mark there, which you did, but you came back to really splash, a splash landing, if you will, in San Francisco where it started. And you want to spend
your 20s in Bristol, Connecticut, or in San Francisco?
Yeah.
I'll take the San Francisco. That was a good choice. That was a very, very good choice.
Beautiful.
Thanks you to everyone who made the choice to spend a little of your very important personal time with me and Sam. Thank you. If you would please hit like and subscribe to not just Damon Bruce Plus, but Thinking Out Loud with Siciliano and Sam as well. And we hope to see you back here. Well, we'll be back here for our live stream watch party during the 49er game on Sunday morning, West Coast time. We'll be getting going at 10 a.m., so bring croissants and coffee. We will then be back for a Monday morning wake up with Kruger. Oh, yeah. A very interesting week next week, and an awful lot of Warriors basketball. They have like a handful of games in just the next handful of days. This old team is going to have its legs tested early, so that's going on this weekend. Big college football weekend, separate the men from the boys weekend football. I mean, it's a good time of the year. And then next weekend, Halloween. Come on.
Right. My favorite holiday. I'll we'll explain that next week. My favorite holiday because I'm an October birthday, but also costumes for women on Halloween spectacular.
It's great.
We'll leave it at that.
Here's how much of a dad I am now. You said Halloween, and before I even thought of Naughty Nurse, I wanted to say, what's your kid wearing?
Exactly. And so he's said many things. I think we landed on Dragon. I will go home to hear that has changed to Robot, but that's what I'm saying. Right now, I believe Dragon is where we're landing. What about you? What do we got for Jack and Ozzy?
So Ozzy is a snake. We just got him like snake skin pajamas. Cool. So he's going to be walking around in like a snake skin suit.
Love.
And Jack, so every year I have a chicken outfit that I put on, like a zip up chicken onesie. Perfect. And that is my Halloween closet, you know, Halloween costume in my closet. I when in doubt, go chicken.
Great.
The kids love it. Jack told me he wanted to be a chicken jockey. I'm like, is that racist? What's a chicken jockey? What are you talking about? No, he wants to be a chicken jockey. And I did not know what he meant until he showed me an inflatable costume where his legs go through it and it's the legs of the chicken. And then you have inflatable dangling human legs. And he looks like he's a kid riding a chicken, but he's doing all the walking.
Unbelievable.
It's like Skywalker on the Tauntaun, but it's a chicken.
But it's,
Ozzy's going to be a snake. Jack's going to be riding a chicken. I'm going to be a chicken, and we'll be coming to your house for a trick or treat Friday
unbelievable.
Night.
I'm all for seeing that photo, please.
We will be sending chicken photos. We will be sharing them with the show for sure. Sammy, thank you for sharing your time with us. What do the Kings got coming up, baby?
Kings got a back-to-back this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, Nashville and Chicago. They then go to the Sharks. By the way, congrats on the Sharks getting their first win last night in Madison Square Garden, but first win of the season. Celebrini hat trick and the assist on the game winner. And by the way, your goalie, who had a miserable game one, came back and got the first win of the season, which is nice. But the Kings return home to host the Red Wings next Thursday. You and I remember when the Red Wings were the best team in hockey, and bring I will always octopi, hate them Scotty for that. Bowman. Exactly. Let's go.
Nothing hurt worse than Chris Chelios playing.
Made no sense. No, that'll be for. And by the way, now Kane, Patrick Kane, Red Wing. Yeah, what?
Hurts, but not as much.
Correct. I understand it.
Even though one guy got a Stanley Cup, the other guy's Chris Chelios. Thank you very much for tuning in. And please do remember, like, subscribe, all those good things. And boy, sports don't build character. They reveal it. And like that, they're gone.